A comedy advice podcast.
An advice podcast for Stefan
and friends
to make exaggerated statements not meant to be taken literally.
What was that, Stefan?
Comedy advice podcast.
Well, hello.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Hey, doing well. How are you, Andy?
Good. What's going on with you, man? We could have done this anytime if we're going to do Zoom.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking that too. I was like, shit, we probably could have done this, you know, whenever was convenient. But I'm happy that it's finally happening. And I'm really happy to meet you first off and then be able to do this podcast with you.
Yeah, man. This is all I've been doing is podcast. it's been different.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've heard you on quite a few different podcasts, which is good because I know that with comedy being kind of dead or in a coma, yeah, at least, there are other creative outlets for you to be able to, you know, kind of do your thing. But
I don't know how creative it is to do. I get the podcast and I obviously have my own, but I don't know how creative it is. If I didn't have to listen to what's in my head, I think it would be better for me. So I don't know why anybody else would want to hear what's in my head, but you know, all right, I'm making it work out.
Oh, nice. But it's funny too. I feel you've got the Spears and Steinberg podcast, which is awesome. And then before that, I was listening. You also had the Smells Like Radio podcast. And it just sounds like you were never a real big fan of podcasting.
I'm never a fan of hearing myself.
Oh, okay. That's the thing.
It is, you know, and it, like with comedy, it's a little bit more arranged, I guess, is how I should look at it. You know, like I'm talking about specifically what I wanted to talk about, I guess. With a podcast, it's kind of like, you know, I guess it could be more pointed, but we are, especially on Spears and Steinberg, we're just kind of on what's at the moment kind of happening. So, and I'm not enjoying anything right now. So I'm having fun. I'm having fun having contact with people, but right. I'm not, I don't get much out of it after, except for the engagement that I'm having. Like I'll have this with you and I'll be like, oh, you know, that was nice. I had this conversation with someone,
right.
But as far as other people listening to it, I was like, why would anybody even want to know? Like, I don't want to know what's going on in there. And, so it's interesting. I haven't figured out the dynamic of myself and, how I connect with others that I don't have a connection to. If them, like, I feel connected to the people at the comedy club because they came out and there's a connection that they were comedy fans, not necessarily mine, you know, Aries fans, but there was right. a connection in that we were all in this comedy thing together. Right. And this doesn't have the same feel to me because you have to be a little bit more careful in what you say because these aren't necessarily people that came to a room for comedy and understanding the kind of comedians that are going to be on stage and what they're going to talk about. So this, you know, it's hard for me to hold myself back from some of the things that I might initially want to say or that I think are funny or that I deal with. And on Spears and Steinberg, we're doing it a little bit, but we're cautious because we don't want to. Both of us have interesting career paths. I mean, I did this when I was way old, and Aries has this reputation for being, I don't know why, difficult, because he's not at all. He's very easy, like, to deal with. But mm-hmm. when he gets, he has a low bar that you can easily get over. But when you don't get over that bar, then he does become irritated. But like any reasonable person should.
Got it.
So on the podcast, we're extra careful to like when we want to talk about something, but we're not supposed to talk about certain things. We talked a little bit about sexual orientation recently,
mm-hmm.
and not deeply because we kind of had to move around it, but it's like we talked a little bit about transsexual.
Uh-huh.
And like, why do we have to be comfortable with it? Can we acknowledge and be like, I get it and I don't want any harm to come to you, but right. I'm not all the way there yet. I'm like, for me, I'm 50. I'm going to be 55 here next month. And so I've lived my life a certain way that really wasn't included in the day to day. And so if I'm accepting of it and, but I haven't got all the way there, I'm not all the way understood. I'm not all the way caught up. Why can't I feel that? Isn't that more important to have the conversation, honest conversation, or is it more important just to appease a general audience, and it's not even the larger audience, it's the louder audience of people that want people to be a certain way. And mm-hmm. I think it's really disingenuous. So that's, I think, why I'm having a hard time with podcasts right now, because I kind of believe that they're a little fake in the way that we address things, because I think we are really censoring ourselves to be safe.
Wow. That was, what a way to start the podcast. That
Sorry,
is,
man.
No, it's good. It's good. And I think it's good stuff too. And I think you're nailing it, because one, the atmosphere is totally different, where somebody could be listening while they're at the gym or at some place where they're not ready to hear the comedy club type jokes. And then so they hear something and they're like, oh shit, I'm offended now. Or just out of context, they might not take it the right way.
And I think that they're not necessarily ready. If they don't have context of who you are as a person, I don't think they're ready to hear your opinion necessarily. I mean, if you popped into one podcast or two podcasts and someone said something that without the previous context of the podcast, you might be, that's inappropriate, or that sounds uneducated, when I don't think that's the case. I'm very, I listen to podcasts. I like to listen to podcasts though. I don't like to listen every week. I like to be surprised. Sometimes I'll catch two in that week, but I'll miss one. I like missing some things. There's so much out there, but I want to be shocked a little bit. And that's what I'm saying we're not doing. When you go to a comedy club though, I think it's, for me, I feel safer, because when people are mad at me for something I say on stage, I can just easily say, sorry, I didn't know you were going to be here. Right. I knew I was going to be here. You knew you were going to be here, but I had no idea you were actually going to be here. So I feel very confident in that idea. And even if they don't like it, even they want to complain to a manager, even they want to complain and go home and tweet something out, that's fine to me, because you came into an area that I had no idea you were coming. I have no idea what your life experience is. So that's fair to me. This is different. I'm trying to really be more honest on the podcast. And I was honest before, and then I think I saw what was happening to everybody, and I think I kind of thought about it a little too much. And I hate long explanations, like I started this podcast off with.
Man,
but I wanted to clear that up. So if people watch this and I say anything that's a little off putting, that's who I am.
You know, I think that's also on brand with the podcast. So I think you're good. I don't think
okay, great.
Yeah, but a good disclaimer. Nonetheless,
yeah, a long one too, unfortunately, but
all good. No, I'm glad we got into the meat of things. And for those of you who are wondering what podcast this is a comedy advice podcast. I'm Stefan Satani, your host, and joining me today, Andy Steinberg.
Hey, jazz hands.
Woo! All right. I'm really excited to be talking with you, because you are an Arizonian born comedian. You grew up in Tucson. And then you started doing comedy at 42 and started doing it in Phoenix. I don't know why I'm telling your story, but just wanted to ask you a little bit.
I like that you know it. It made me happy that you knew it. Thanks.
Oh man, I think it's very interesting, and I think it's really cool. And I also loved how you started to get into comedy. You started performing at festivals, performed with and for Mark Maron, Dave Attell, Doug Benson, which I think is awesome. And I loved how we were talking about it a little bit before the Smells Like Radio podcast, where it sounds like you and Jeff Weil would go and just crash green room, not crash green rooms, but would get
No, it was a little bit of a crashing of a green room. It was actually, because I would ask, because I was kind of, I had the in at the club. So I'd ask if we could, you know, can I get you for 20 minutes? We'll just do it like in between shows.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, that'd be cool. They didn't want to say no. So I felt, you know, the ownership of the club was a little irritated with me doing it sometimes.
Oh, okay.
They felt like they might be just saying yes because they didn't want to have to say no. And so that was one of the issues with it. It was also Ricardo. Do you know Ricardo Rocha?
No,
he's an Arizona comic. Okay. He was out in New York for a while. He's back in Arizona. Okay. He was one of the guys, and he was really one of the guys that we weren't ready to do this podcast, because the other person was Matt Anderson. And he's okay. Also, you know, Matt. Matt yeah. was an Arizona comic that actually is in Atlanta now. He was in New York for a while.
Oh,
but
cool.
Ricardo knew that I had the connection, and he knew I wanted to do the podcast. Jeff wanted to do the podcast, but Jeff's always more relaxed than anyone else. And Matt didn't really, he knew how to kind of do the equipment, but he really wasn't good at it yet. And so Ricardo was just forcing these to be done. And so we had some good ones, some that we never released. And then when Jeff wanted to do the podcast Smells Like Radio, he asked me if he could take the name, because it was the name of the podcast that I was doing.
That
we all ended up together on. Mm-hmm. And I said, I had no problem with that. So he released that the episode that he actually ended up with the copy of it. Was with Bobcat Goldthwait. And that's the one he introduced as the first episode. And then he had me on, I think, the next week. And then that's kind of the launch. And it's his podcast completely now, Smells Like Radio. If you ever ask me to do it again, I'm always happy to hang out with Jeff. So, because he's a fun dude. But yeah, that's how that really, I would like to say that was a real podcast, but it really was just a real mess. And there was times when we had like four mics, but we were recording all on one track, so we couldn't do anything. We couldn't change anything. It was a big learning process. So I'm glad that I did it, but it was really fun. Bobcats was the best. I'm glad that's the one that got saved. But there's nice. One with there's one with Jamie Kennedy that was never released that wasn't bad. But again, Bobcats was the best. It really, really was.
Oh, that's awesome. And then you decided to, you were done with it and then left.
Well, Matt was going to do something else. I think he wanted to move. I don't know what was going on with Matt. And Ricardo always wants to do it, but then he's such a, like a guerrilla style, like whatever he's doing, like we're going to do it. Even if I don't know how to do it, strap these things on and let's go. And I really got to the point where I was getting in too much trouble to be asking people to crash the green room. But the green room experience was the best part of it, because they were kind of in their element. You know, they're at the show. We're promising it's only going to be 20 minutes. And no one only did 20 minutes. Everybody always did.
That's how you get in. I like
that. Well, because they were having a good time. I mean, we made it fun. We didn't make it like a... That was one of the things with Bobcat that was so great, is that he kept on noticing that we weren't trying to control the room.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so he was into it, but he was also, now Bobcat was the director of Jimmy Kimmel for a long time, and right. he directed his own movies. So like when the fan's going, he's just looking at there's one point where the fan turns on, and it was like an automatic and turned on, and it's just going woo-hoo, and you can kind of hear it in the background, and he's like he's looking at me, and I think it got cut out. I think Jeff cut it out, but he's looking at me like you gonna do anything about that? And I'm like, no, I go, I like the background noise. He goes, oh, okay. And then the servers come in and they're putting food down. I go, no, I like all this. And he goes, and so then when it came time for me to ask questions, I go, do you have a hard time letting go of your director's hat when you're in someone else's space? And he goes, so much so. Like, it was so hard for him to let that happen, because he knows it's going to have background noise. And that's not what ideally, I knew that wouldn't be his podcast. He wouldn't want that kind of podcast.
I was
really trying to capture the green room and what happens in the green room, and the, like, you're not just sitting back there. There's motion, there's action. So that was what that was about.
That's really cool. And I was curious about that. I know you kind of explained it, but the energy that goes on with the comics, because I'm sure once you get to a certain point, it's like, okay, I got this. But I don't know if it varies comic to comic on, okay, I need some time to get ready, or I need time to mentally prepare. But, being in there in that energy seems like it could be really fun or really tense, but it seems like you guys made it really fun.
Well, most of the time, I think Jamie Kennedy's, when we did it with him, I think one of the reasons I didn't want to release it is that I think we made him uptight.
Oh, really?
You know, cause I think he wanted his space, and he agreed to do it, and he had fun. He had fun in the beginning. And then I asked him a weird question, and he didn't like the question. It turned into, just a little tension where I asked him his experiences. I heard you have several experiences at the Playboy Mansion. Anything you want to tell us? And he was like, No, you know, and then he tried to make up some stories, and he, you know, I guess it was more private. But to me, like someone who's only thought about the possibility of ever having enough, recognition, I guess, in this business that I would even get an invite to the Playboy Mansion seemed amazing to me. You know, the idea of that. And so if he would have said, yeah, like the first time, I mean, I was expecting an answer like, dude, like the first time you go to the grotto, that's the thing you're going to remember for the rest of your life. Something simple, I thought.
Right.
And he was, I think, you know, certain comics have been thrown under the bus before by people, or, you know, just, you know, have things have been taken out of context. So they're more careful about them. And, you know, I have interesting experience with some people that, I mean, you brought up Dave Attell. Dave Attell was one of the most interesting experiences I ever had. Doug Benson, a very, very calm, very interesting experience, but also very non-interesting at the same time. He's just, he's just high, you know, having a good time. And, you know, he pulls out his little piece of paper on stage to read his notes for his jokes because he's high and he needs that little piece of paper. You see that. But it was a very, you know, so it was very enlightening to me, but it was a very calm experience. He just wanted to chill out. He's just a really relaxed, you know, relaxed guy. And he wants to be that way. So when you're in the back room, when you're in the green room with him, you just leave him alone and you're relaxed. I mean, other people I've had back there are just like Bobcat was, bring it on. Let's do whatever you want to talk about. And as difficult as we could make it, he would take us up a notch. He said things because one of the hooks for our podcast was our guest would leave three questions for the next guest we were going to have.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And so I said, so ask anything you want, because it's going to be, but we're going to let him know it's coming from you. And he asked some really raunchy, rough questions, and he didn't care. I said, you know, I'm going to tell him it's from you. He goes, I don't give a shit. You know, it just depends on who's back there. And all the comics, you know, when they come to a new city, they usually know that they're going to have a host that they don't know. So that can add some fun to the room. So it's somebody different that they don't know. And that kind of can brighten up a room or can really dull it down. So, these guys like a little adventure. I think that they want that because it breaks up the monotony on the day to day, but you catch someone on the wrong day, you never know what's going to happen. And you know that from doing the podcast. You probably have people on your podcast that you think are really high energy or going to be great on the podcast, and they come on, maybe it's not their day. So, or the opposite.
You're totally right. Yeah. I when you were telling me about some of the experiences you had, I thought of some of the ones that I've had where I totally expect trying to research, do interviews, hear different podcasts that they're on, and I hear them and they come on and I'm expecting high energy and they're like, hey, so how long is this? Can we just zip through this? And I'm like, oh, okay. All right, here we go. So it's something that I have to work with, and I know that I'm not a huge podcast. I'm not Joe Rogan. So I know that there's a little bit of a favor for those comedians to come on, just like, you know, you as well. I really appreciate you guys coming on. So I try to do my work, and if the attitude's not there, I try and bring what I have to make it fun in whatever way possible and just make them hopefully not regret their time.
All that being said, I don't think Joe Rogan knew that he was Joe Rogan until he was Joe Rogan. I mean, that's a metamorphosis. I mean, you don't open up the door and walk into that space. He beat that space up for a while to claim it as his own. So it may be your space soon.
That's what I'm going to tell my wife. Yo, babe, Joe Rogan didn't know he was Joe Rogan until he was Joe Rogan. So
Rogan, that's how it works, man. You don't know. But, you know, like, because even like Maron had, like, for comedy podcasts, Maron was the measuring stick. He was the guy that was on the top, and all of a sudden Joe, you know, he's doing one, and then he went to two a week. And then Rogan was like, you know, hell with that. I'm going to do 12 hours every day, you know, and I mean, being a little facetious, but yeah, and then he turned it into a whole different thing. So, you know, that's the really cool thing about podcasting that, you know, as I'm saying the things that I didn't like about it, the coolest thing is this medium is wide open. This is still the Wild West. There's a frontier out there that we don't even understand. We know what everyone's doing, but we don't know what it is going to be. I mean, it's still wide open. So
yeah,
there's a lot more room here.
I totally agree. And I think there's going to be a shift too, because right now what I've been doing since I've been stuck at home, and a lot of comedians as well, it's just been blasting out emails, and I've been able to get a lot of guests doing maybe 5-6 podcasts a week, and I'm releasing 3, maybe 4 a week sometimes. And I've also noticed, and I've been researching trends on Spotify and other sources where they're saying, right now, less people are commuting, less people are traveling, hence less people are listening to podcasts. So we're seeing the numbers go down. But I think, optimistically speaking, end of this year, maybe after that, I think the listening is going to start picking back up, because podcasting, yeah, it's not falling off by any means. It's not down to zero, but there's a little softness, and I think it's going to pick back up. And I think the people that were doing podcasts, I think they are going to be in a really good position for once that starts, because there's going to be so much audio gold for people to be able to mine and find and listen to.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that it's going to happen like on my Amazon account, mm-hmm, I can ask Alexa to play. It plays to any podcast I ask it to. Now that as technology evolves, and it doesn't have to evolve that much further, just the convenience of it and being at home as we are right now. And I think being at home is going to be a lot bigger part of what we do going forward anyway, because I think companies are going to see how much money they can save and how much more, depending on the business, how much work they can get out of an employee that's at home and comfortable.
Yeah.
And doesn't have to commute and doesn't have to do a lot of different things. I think there's going to be a lot more at home. And as that technology comes up and people are more comfortable with it, I think it's not going to be a big deal for you just to be at home and, you know, type in, you know, you're on your computer and you just yell out to Alexa what you want because you're bored. I mean, that's part of it, finding it on the computer, and you're already, it's a little bit of work. Yeah. And not that it's a lot of work, but it's just enough to maybe make a lot of people who aren't real savvy with their computer or their technology, when they're able just to shout it out and get it pumped into their living room or whatever area or their office, I think that changes a lot.
Oh, 100%. I mean, all the ingredients for me to make a burrito are downstairs, but I'm too fucking lazy to do it. So DoorDash is right here on my phone. Why not just go there and order it?
Yeah.
So
really where we are. And I think everybody's going to come over, but there's so much content. Yeah. And see, I kind of, like what you said, there's a lot, and you're getting a lot of people on and you're getting a lot of hours. I'm kind of almost the opposite. I think it's just because I'm not an angry person. I'm not, but I have anger towards, like, I hate bad content. And when I go on Instagram, and Instagram is the only app that I use. I mean, I'm connected to Facebook, but only through Instagram. I don't go on, I don't put out posts. Every once in a while I might. And every once in a while, if it's something that I just think is something I want to say, I might hit Twitter. But usually it's just Instagram 95% of the time.
Right.
And I go on Instagram and I watch, and I see so many people that are just putting out content just for the sake of connecting with the audience. And I wish I could compare myself to Dave Attell. I can't, but I like his style better, where I'd rather not do anything than something that isn't what I want to do. And he's doing a lot of nothing right now. Not that he's doing nothing. He's doing a lot of not putting out things, because if it's not quality, he doesn't want to put it out. Now,
right.
I see the upside in putting out a lot of content, but I really want my content to be good, or I don't want to do it.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I was just thinking about that. I'll touch on the podcasting part and the content in a second. But on the social media side, I've been struggling with that as well, as I'm thinking, okay, everyone's telling me just pump out content, 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 content. And I'm seeing this content. I came across the same realization where I see people just posting things and I'm like, what is this garbage? And my thumb, it's just an instinct now, or a reflex. I'll just like it. And I'm like, fuck, I'm adding to the problem. So I see this stuff, and then I'm just like, is this really that good, or is it just what's in front of me? And I'm just like, oh, I'll support this person, or I'll like this shit. And so it caused me to start thinking, okay, should I really be putting pressure on myself to post a bunch of stuff that's not that great, or try and focus on some really great stuff, making me happy, and then hopefully making others happy? So
I like that area better, I don't think that that is the right answer. I think the people want to see as much contact and content. I mean, they want to. So want that.
You're right.
But I'm not doing it.
You're right. And I think sometimes it can be inflated where some people, you see how many followers they have and it's half those people are bought or likes are bought or whatever. And so it kind of leads down this trail of deceit where you might think something is garbage, but it has so many likes and you're like, well, is it? And you question yourself. And then just because of the artificial inflation from fake likes or fake followers.
Well,
I guess I'm a sheeple. Maybe you're more of an independent thinker, but
maybe I'm just lazy and I'm using that just so that I don't have to do stuff.
Yeah, that's true too. But as far as the podcasting though, it has been fantastic for me. I don't know. I can't judge if it's good content or not. I'm seeing we're slowly trickling up with some more reviews. And
are you enjoying the conversations you're having?
I am.
It's good content.
And I have to say that I have gotten so much better at it. I'm still no Joe Rogan, but Joe Rogan didn't know he was Joe Rogan before he was Joe Rogan. So, hey, there's that. But I also feel like these are like my open mics almost. It's like an open mic and a show at the same time. Because I'm as I listen back, I'm thinking they're obviously recorded. So I'm editing, I'm listening back. I'm like, okay, why'd you say that? That was dumb. You could be better here, blah, blah, blah. And so I feel like, one, I'm being more comfortable with just meeting a person because I haven't had many recurring people on. It's all been new people.
Yeah.
And so breaking that ice has been a little bit easier for me. And I at least become less nervous about it. I used to be shaking before. I'd be pacing around in my room. I'd ask my wife for a good luck kiss. I still do that, but you know, that's for other reasons. But So I'm in here with a raging hard boner, but I'm not nervous anymore. No. you can't see doesn't hurt you. But no, I feel like I'm less nervous now. And now I feel like it's starting to really flow into a direction that I like. I'm getting people that I feel comfortable with and we're having good conversations. I'm enjoying myself. I hope you're enjoying yourself, but
yeah, I am. And you know, the nice thing about doing a podcast with people that you really don't know that you're meeting is that the organic conversations are great because you don't have that inside conversation that only you two know. Because you know somebody or you're leading someone to get them to start. You can't lead someone you really don't know. You can bring up things that you know about them, but the conversation is organic. It's nice. So I think you're doing things in a great way. It's great.
Oh, thank you. I set that up just so I could get that validation. So I appreciate.
Well, you got it.
I went fishing. I got a compliment. So I'm good. But no, I want to turn the shower nozzle and spray you with some compliments on the compliment shower. Because I think you did an awesome job. Started comedy at 42 and you're touring with an opening for Ari Spears. You were crushing it in the Phoenix scene. I wanted to ask a little bit about that because right now, I feel like the Phoenix scene has blown up and there are like five, I think the Comedy Spot closed now, but now there's Stand Up Live, the House of Comedy, a couple different places. There are a lot of comedians, it seems. I kind of came into it fresh in 2018 because I was living in New Jersey for 8 years before that. So it was totally different.
Yeah, the Phoenix scene... Yeah, you came into it. It had really blown up. You know, we had more comedy clubs in Phoenix than there's actually in LA, in LA proper.
Wow. I did not know that.
Well, because we had, at one point we had Stand Up Live.
Right.
And we had Tempe Improv. And then you had Rick Bronson's House of Comedy.
Yeah.
And you had Howard Hughes' Stand Up Scottsdale. And then you had... the comedy spot.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to, I don't want to really crap on Comedy Spot or Stand Up Scottsdale. They were more of a B room. I think Howard got everybody just before they blew up to A room comics. So, I mean, there's still really good rooms, but in LA you really only have improv. It's pretty close. You have improv, the Comedy Store, Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
And then, but then you got to go to Pasadena to get into the other clubs. I mean, you got to go, they're further away. I mean, there's more clubs in LA. I guess the HaHa is kind of LA. It's Burbank, but okay. I mean, they're not in that. I mean, in that tight area, we had a lot going on. So, yeah, I mean, Phoenix is not to mention that we have the casinos that are also having, you know, major acts out. There was a lot going on in a very short time in Phoenix. It blew up. And there didn't used to be a lot of comics in Phoenix. What you don't know about me from that is that I didn't start really doing comedy till 42, but about 5 years before that, at 37, I did it for about 6 months. I was dared to do it. I did a contest. It was actually a Tempe Improv and I loved it. But there wasn't any place to go do comedy. There wasn't a lot of open mics. There wasn't a lot of places. You'd do a Hidden House, which you probably don't know. It used to be a place that was every Wednesday and it was like a really, really cool room. And you would wait a month to 6 weeks to do an open mic set.
Damn.
Yeah, you had to be on the list and it took a month to 6 weeks to get on. So you really valued your open mic time. And that's the thing that I don't want to, everything I say sounds negative. I don't want to sound negative. That's the thing though that I missed about the old Phoenix scene is that, because there was so much opportunity in so many bars and so many places, people were, when you only had 5 minutes and it was the only place you were going to get up that month, I mean, you really put a lot of work into that 5, 7, 10 minute set. If you were really rolling, they'd give you a little extra time. But, you know, when there was so much, it also allowed you, the upside is that you could get a little bit more experimental on your open mic because you knew you could get another one in that night or tomorrow you were going to do another spot. So, I mean, it has its ups and downside.
Gotcha. Okay. Nice. And then, so you were doing that. You were crushing it in the Phoenix scene. And then you ended up touring.
What's crushing it? What is this? I don't think anybody crushes when you're in Phoenix. I might have been working. I was working. I wasn't crushing it. I was working.
That's what we consider crushing in the Phoenix
getting
scene.
Work? Getting yeah, work? Yeah. Yeah. So I was working. I was getting work.
So you were getting work in the Phoenix scene. And then... I don't know in the timeline. We're going to have to figure this out in post. But then you ended up featuring and opening for Ari Spears. So how did that end up happening?
You know, I hosted for him one time he was out here, and I had a few jokes that he liked. Aries has a thing about he doesn't like things to come from the same place.
Okay.
So he really likes his opener to have a different perspective than he has. And, I have a different perspective, but I grew up in Tucson. I'm actually Mexican and Jewish. So I have, I grew up by the Air Force base. So I roamed through a lot of racial content wasn't hard for me to find because I was involved in a lot of, with a lot of different people. I mean, I grew up in a neighborhood that by the Air Force base that featured, you know, Mexican dudes, black dudes, redneck dudes, hillbillies. I mean, I had everything around me, you know, I was the only Mexican Jew in the neighborhood, but we had a lot of different, I was the only one in my house because my mom got divorced from that relationship. So I was the only one.
Oh,
so
man.
I had my own opinions on some race things and I just slowly put a couple of them out there and he liked it, but I really didn't talk to him. And the next year he came out, he asked for the guy who hosted last time to feature.
Oh,
he thought it was, you know, he was like, oh, you get that guy. I like that guy. It's basically what he said. He didn't know my name or anything. If you got that guy, I like that guy. That guy was fine. And so then I asked him if I could do a little bit more. And he was like, yeah, go for it. And then he heard that. And then that same night, he goes, what else you got? And so I went and did some other stuff that he was just surprised that I would even do. And we talked about going out. Getting a few dates from him. And I didn't. I called him a few times and it, for whatever reason, his life was going in a direction. And I have a rule that I don't usually call more than, and it's a bad rule, especially when you are needing work. You know what I mean? If it benefits you, you should call as much as you need to get that done. But I am not that person. So I put 3 calls in and 3 was my max. 2 is my max now, but 3 was my max before. And it's my insecurity that is the reason why it's that way. Because if I only put 2 in and they didn't call me back, well, I didn't try that hard and they didn't get back to me. If I put a lot of effort in and they don't get back to me, then I'm just horrible. I suck and no one wants to talk to me. So you got to make your rules up as you go along. Yeah.
It stings my heart just a little bit. Cause I feel that I don't have a rule for it, I guess, but or a definitive rule, but I think two is probably my max before I'm like, yeah. I don't want to put myself that much out there, because then I'll fall if they don't catch me. Oh.
Yeah, that's the hard part about this. So yeah, I think I gave him my third call and I didn't hear back from him. And then he came the next time and he asked me to be on the show again. And so we were talking, he goes, man, I don't know. I should have had you come out. And I go, yeah, you said that last time and nothing happened. And he goes, I was having a hard time. I had some shit last year. And I was like, yeah, I think he was going through a divorce. And so I knew he had a lot of stuff going on, but you know, whatever. I don't care. I mean, I care more about it now. At that time, I didn't care that he was going through a divorce. I was just trying to get a road gig.
Right.
And,
right.
So he gave me his new number and he said, call me and don't stop calling me until I return your call. And I called him again three times and he got back to me. Then he gave me a date. We went out and we did one date and it worked out pretty well. And then we talked a couple times on the phone, and he had another guy that he went out with sometimes too. And the other guy is from Florida. And then he started doing a lot of cruises. So then he asked me to come do more stuff. And I just took all the dates. He goes, you can do all these? And I go, yeah, I'll just take all the dates. And I didn't care if I was making money or how I just wanted to go up every week. And I wanted to go up with an audience. Aries audience can be trying. It's hard, especially if you image real white. And I image real, I look like a rabbi. So, you know, that's not what they're expecting to come out. And I knew it was going to be a challenge. And I really wanted to do this. And it worked out really well. We started to really get along, and we actually became friends. And so that's how this evolved. And then we started to do the podcast, and now we wanted to do the podcast. That was important too for our podcast. We wanted to do it on the road. Mm-hmm. And so we'd have things to talk about from the nights, you know, from our nights out, whatever we're doing.
Yeah.
And that's how that evolved. But that's what really, I think the podcast kind of really glued it together, and why we continue to stay on the road, because it's really easy for us to do our podcast. Now, if I get other dates and I do take them, I've had some one nighter headliner spots that I got. So then I either take that and then meet him up later where I can do that, or, you know, then we don't work together that week. But right now we don't work together at all because everything's closed. So, that changes the dynamic of the podcast too. But that's how that interaction with Aries started. But I really have to, you know, before I, cause I made the joke about, you know, what's killing in Phoenix. I really owe a lot to Stand Up Live and Tempe Improv and Joel, who is the owner, and Matt, who's mm-hmm. one of the owner partner and Booker. Without them, I wouldn't have got any of it. You know, I had a nice relationship with them. A lot of people think that this is funny. They think that I got in because I was working for them. I wasn't working for them. I got in with them, and because they needed some help, I went to work for them. And then when I quit that, I started getting more dates. I would have worked for them regardless if I needed those dates. I liked the guys and I was doing it to benefit them. It really didn't benefit me, because when I started working for them, they wanted to book me less, and I wasn't allowed to tell comics that I was a headliner, or that I was allowed to tell the headlining comics that I was a comic, because they didn't want me to try to sneak in and get guest spots. And when I would get a guest spot, Matt would call me and he'd be like, hey man, nice guest spot. How'd you get that? And I would have to say, well, this person doesn't, and he goes, okay, yeah, whatever. But so it really wasn't to my benefit. But regardless of any of that stuff, without them, they really helped me out by giving me an audience, like a real room to work in. And it's great doing open mics, and I still do open mics. I love mics, but when you can work on a weekend and you can feel, you know, a few hundred people in the room and learn how to work that, and working with different comics, that's great. And you feel kind of like how that crowd perceives you. And that isn't just the crowd, how that audience perceives you. And it changes the way that you do comedy. It doesn't change your jokes, just changes the way you stand on certain things, or how you present things change. And then when you go on the road, which because of Matt and Joel and then meeting Aries and going on the road as much as I have, you don't learn anything in CDU. Man, St. Louis, just for instance, the Midwest, it's right. completely different than any other place that I've been. That Midwest, I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to crap on the Midwest, but you know, they're nice in the Midwest. Jokes aren't just jokes to them. It's personal. You know,
they get
a little, oh, you know, when I talk about like my son who's on the autism spectrum, they're like, oh, you know, they don't get that this is a story, but there's jokes in there. Yeah. And it's not to make fun of him. It's to make fun of us and how we deal with it.
Yes.
They don't get that, but you go on the East Coast, the West Coast, where they're more experienced with it and more experienced with comedy, and they're a little hardened in their heart. So they don't get so goopy.
Yeah.
It changes. And that's what this is all about, man. If you can, you know, you get your feet under, you get just like some comedy legs, and then to take it out across the country is where you actually learn. And I can't wait to go do out of this country, because that's a whole nother kind of connection with people.
Oh, that's really cool. Is that in the future plans? I mean,
yeah. So hopefully, if we ever open up again, it was something that was being worked on and then kind of went away. So we'll see what happens. But I really can't wait to experience that. And it's going to be devastating. It's going to be painful, but it's going to be enlightening. You know, it really changes your perspective. And I love seeing how other parts of this country work. And I want to see other parts of the world work.
That's so cool. And that's so fascinating to me too, that the aspect of traveling abroad. And like you said, we have a micro version of it here. We all speak English. And I know they do in the UK and Ireland and all those places too, but the regions have different sentiments. And like you said, they're a little more mushy hearted in the Midwest, where they're a little more hardened in the East Coast. And I grew up here in Phoenix, or grew up in Cottonwood, Arizona, near Sedona,
okay.
on a farm. And so then I moved to New York or New Jersey, and I was totally blindsided by how blunt people would be, but I ended up loving it. I'm like, God, people tell me exactly.
Fair.
Yeah. People tell me exactly how they're thinking and what they know. And they're honest with me. So I'm like, okay, you like this? You don't like this? You want me to get the fuck out of your way? Whatever. I got it. And then once I made friends, they're like lifelong friends.
Because it's real. Like, I'm not saying it's not real anywhere else. What I'm saying is, when someone tells you what they like or don't like, it either works or doesn't work for you. And then you move through that. Here, it's like no one says anything. And you think that you have a friend, and then you find out later he hates a certain aspect of you, or she, you know, it's different. It's the honesty is unbelievable. And it's so important to be able to have honest conversations and disagree. And I love that in the East Coast, more so than the West Coast and the Midwest, arguing is okay. Like, it's okay to have an argument. It's okay to have a differing opinion and still be friends.
Yes.
Where it's almost like as you go through as you venture west, it's less about that. It's less about being honest. It's less about, and then trying to even understand or comprehend that someone else might have a different thought process than you. It's very interesting. I love the East Coast. I've always wanted to be in the East Coast. Even when I grew up as a little kid, I wanted to go to New York. And then I went to New York and I felt like I was home. Like, I felt like, oh, this is where I was supposed to be. It just took me forever for whatever obstacles that I had, or for whatever, you know, things I had to go through to get there. I'm more at peace there than I'm anywhere else.
Yeah, no, it's a shame that I'm living here in Arizona and saying this, but the East Coast, it'll always have a soft spot in my heart, because I think that the people there, I loved the people there. It was a shock at first, but it soothed me. It was like the honking of horns, the yelling, all of that stuff. It was just nice and soothing for me. And I liked the refreshing honesty from people. And the friends that I made there are so fantastic. And the diversity, too. I know you would talk.
Diversity is amazing. Yeah. It's amazing because you can't stay with your, you can't stay in your comfort zone.
Yes.
There. You have to be out. You have to engage with people that you wouldn't engage with. Like, when you go out to eat here in Arizona, if you go out to eat in Arizona, you know, you're going to see basically 70% you, you know?
Yeah.
And there you go. And no matter what group you were in, no matter what group you were in, because you're going to go to a place that just is specifically for that group, because you'll go to your little pocket that you're comfortable with. Yeah. Where when you're in New York, it's not that way. I mean, you got to deal with everybody and everybody has to deal with you.
Yes.
So there's a fairness to it that exists.
Yes.
I also don't feel crazy when I'm out there because I have someplace to be. And if someone's in front of me and I want to get around them and I move around them and I just take off, so is another 28 people doing that. And the ones that don't want to don't do that. Here in Phoenix, when I'm doing that, it's like, I'm like the crazy person. Oh, where's he going? What's his problem? You know, I have someplace to be. I don't want to be in the street.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly.
It's much more comfortable for me out there. It's really, it's a very ill-fitting but warm blanket for me.
That, yes, exactly. Exactly. It'll always have a nice polluted place in my heart, I think. It's just wonderful. But anyway, I wanted to get into the self-help portion where we answer some questions and things like that. But I just wanted to take a pause and say this was an excellent talk. I really enjoyed the interview part with you and a conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. Really nice. I like the conversation.
Yeah. It was really good. Now, we're going to get into the self-help portion because I think we're both qualified to be able to do that. And I like to start us off with an inspirational quote that'll help inspire us to be able to answer these questions that have been found across the internet. They're absolutely ridiculous questions, by the way. But before I get started with my quote, I like to ask my guests if they have any inspirational quotes that help get them through their dark days.
My only quote that I go to, it's my go-to because I don't have a great memory. I don't have recall on things. I don't do movie quotes, but I have one movie quote that I've always remembered. And it's from one of my favorite movies of all time, which is Buckaroo Banzai, Across the Eighth Dimension. And the quote was, no matter where you go, there you are. And
I love it.
It's the only one I can throw out. It's the only one I can remember.
I like that. Hey, it's a good one. I feel, and it's true. It rings true. No matter.
It rings true, and it's a great scene in the movie. So
I haven't even heard of that movie, by the way.
Of course not. It's one of those weird movies from the 80s.
Buckaroo Banzai?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
If you go online, though, there's a whole like commitment of weirdos to Buckaroo Banzai.
Of course there is. I love every little thing. There's a little sect of zealots. I love
that. But if you look up the cast, it's an unbelievable cast of people that are in it.
Oh, really?
It's like one of Ellen Barkin's first movie. Peter Weller's in it. Jeff Goldblum's in it. I'm trying to remember names. This is really good for me.
Wow.
John Lithgow's in it.
Wow.
Yeah, you got it. There's a bunch of other people in there that I'm not going to remember. So,
okay,
check it out. There you go.
Since I'm stuck at home, we've got a new refreshing thing for movie night. Before I won't get too much into it, but we watch a lot of TV now that we're stuck inside. So my wife and I, between us two, I want to watch action and adventure, and she likes Fixer Upper and cooking shows. So we compromise and watch Fixer Upper and cooking shows. And so I get like maybe one time I'll select something and she's like, this sucks. And then it kind of does suck. I don't do my research. I panic. She's like, you can choose. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's choose this. And then it ends up sucking. So then we go back to Fixer Upper. So it's a perpetual cycle.
A bad movie's still worth watching sometimes. I think there's so much in there. But don't have her watch Buckaroo Banzai with you. Have her go watch her own Fixer Upper show. You are going to get in she's going to be so irritated with you by the end of it.
That's awesome. I also think that's kind of an inspirational quote right there. A bad movie is worth watching sometimes. I like that one.
There's always something in a bad movie.
That you're right. You're right. And sometimes it's so bad it's good. Sometimes you form bonds because of this horrible movie, but there's this silly quote in it. That's great. All right.
There you go.
Well, good.
What's your quote?
So now my quote, I got it from a robot. It's called Inspirobot. And what it does is it uses AI to generate the wisest words known to man and then just mash them together for an inspirational quote. So we can try and decipher it. But this week, Inspirobot says, have you tried getting yourself a girl? More of a question, I think. But I guess it could make sense if you're feeling lonely.
And yeah.
If you're interested in women.
Yeah. I think it could be inspirational. I mean, I don't think there's any guy that really is laying around going, you know what? I didn't think of that one. if they're lonely, that's probably what they were thinking about.
Yeah, that's true. This is more like Depressobot instead of Inspirobot, because I think it's like, well, hey, buddy, you obviously have nothing going on. Have you tried getting yourself a girl? Because there's nothing you can do to fix yourself.
Yeah, maybe it should have said, have you tried getting a real girl?
Oh, there you go. I like that. Yeah, throw the blow up out. Well, that's great. I think we nailed that one. So we're going to move on to the questions.
Okay.
We've got our first question. This one is found from Reddit. It's by our fan. It's found by our fan, Carrie. Thank you, Carrie. How do I impress my boyfriend's German parents? They don't know English very well, and I don't know German at all. But I'm flying 3,000 miles to meet them, so I really want to make a lasting impression and make them like me. What could I do?
Well, if you're Jewish, I would advise you not to let them know. Yeah. That would be... that'd be the first thing that I'd probably go with.
That is okay. That's a good tip. I like that. So
going strong, you know, going strong. And if you're not Jewish, perfect. Just you know, highlight that. I'm not Jewish.
highlight how non-Jewish you are. Okay. I like that.
I would also not move your arms a lot. I think they're very rigid. They don't appreciate a lot. This is more of an Italian, they're more rigid. Stay in your space, you know, kind of, you know, keep to yourself. Don't break any, you know, make sure that bubble is sufficient for them to feel comfortable. I would say that.
I like that.
And I probably talk really with an aggressive nature so that they make sure that they can hear everything you're saying.
Yell all, you don't speak German, but yell all your English. Maybe do it in a German accent so you'll think that they can understand better.
I think that would be more for her than it would be for them. But I mean, I still think it would feel good. They would, well, at least she's trying, you know.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Peter Schnitzel. I think German accents are fun too, I think.
Yeah. I think you would put more of the hello. You got to give it the.
Yes. Yeah. Like the.
Very,
okay, I like that. Maybe you could also try and impress them by showing that you know the metric system. So I know you said 3,000 miles. Be like, I traveled 6,000 kilometers to get here. I'm a meter and 67 centimeters tall, and I'm here to impress you. But don't sound that suave. Yell it, like you said, because I feel like that's the language of aggressive love, a tough love.
I like meters, not yards. You know, That's good. I like what you're saying. I like that. That shows her intelligence, which I think is, you know, being on the metric system.
That's really good. Okay. And anything, maybe learn a word or two of German. I feel like that would be,
you know, like just a couple. Like, what does Wiedersehen mean, right? Wiedersehen, isn't that like goodbye?
Yes, goodbye.
How come we all know what goodbye is in German, but there's not like a really how are you doing kind of word that we know?
Shit, that's a good point. I'm trying to.
It's the rigid aggressiveness. They don't care that you're there. They care that you're leaving.
Yes.
They'll make a grand exit when she leaves that night, when she, after she meets them, leave. Oh, and maybe like a good German wine, like a Gewürztraminer or something like that would be something that she could bring to the table.
That's a good idea. Or beer. Are they beer people?
They're beer people, but you know, if you're going to dinner, usually you bring a bottle of wine.
I like that. And you know what? It's going to make you stand out. Because if maybe the ex-boyfriend brought beer, everyone brings beer over there. And then that they're more wine folks. Well, even if they're not, they're like, ooh, wine, sophisticated wine, American. And you're like 1.57 liters, because that's metric system again. So you're good.
There you go.
All right.
I think we're nailing this for her.
I think we crushed. I don't know the word for da. Yes. Da. We nailed it. Crushed. Yeah. Okay. Moving on to the next question. This one's from Reddit, from our fan Kirk. It says, my dad has no table manners. What can I do to make him improve? He has literally no etiquette when it comes to eating. He slouches and he talks with his mouth full of food. He drinks water really loud and he often just lifts up his plate and shoves his food into his mouth with a fork. To make things worse, my dad never wears a shirt at the dining table during the summer. Help.
How is there any background? How old is this person? Dad is 55, but how old is the person?
Oh, good question.
I would just not go home for dinner anymore. That's especially during the summer.
That's a good, especially.
And is this at home, well, obviously at home, not wearing the shirt. Does this also occur at restaurants? The shoveling the food, the aggressive nature of eating.
That's a good
I'm a loud drinker, so I kind of understand some of the complaints. Mm-hmm. My kids have given me the same complaints in my drinking, but I need some more background.
That's a good idea. You know, I'm a slurper as well. My wife has made me know that. So I think one thing that my wife did for me, maybe it was a little passive aggressive now that I'm thinking about it, but she got me a crazy straw. So now I don't slurp. I just sip with my straw. There might be that annoying last liquid drop, but I think the rest of it's going to be a pleasant audio experience for you. If you just give him a crazy straw, one that he likes, maybe if he's a Pats fan, you could get him a little Tom Brady crazy straw or something like that. So that could get rid of the slurping.
I think if you're sitting at the table, if you started talking about your dad's chest hair, if you just started talking about it and talk about the way that it's like how it's nicely moved around, especially to the back area, like, you know, I almost want you, like, I'd almost like to sit behind you, Dad, because the hair back there is, it's hypnotic. I would like to look at it more. I think you might want to up the ante of your friends that you bring over to really shame your dad into putting on a shirt. I'm really stuck at the shirt more than the scooping of the food or the shirt is like, I really prefer a shirt while I'm eating dinner.
I think a lot of establishments do with the no shirt, no service rule. Yeah. I think it's just kind of disturbing if you see a topless person, but then a topless person with a lot of hair, that just starts to introduce a lot of unwanted scenarios to the imagination. Yeah. Like what if food starts to, like a spaghetti noodle just gets stuck and intertwines with the hair, gets crusty. He doesn't shower, so it stays in there. He spills some wine. Does it change color? All these thoughts just popping into your head you don't know about. So I think the shirt really is a main center of focus here. And
if
very
he's
disturbing.
The last to come to the table when you're all seated too, there's a belly button that makes an appearance.
Oh yeah. And then he might pick the belly button. I feel like
I don't know. I think if you're the way he's describing the dad, there is definitely sounds like there's an opportunity for some belly button work right there. Like he's in it, he's working areas of his body.
The scene is ripe for belly button picking.
Yeah. I definitely think that there's a shame. I definitely invite over some groups of people that would make him uncomfortable and shame him a little bit. That's the one that I would go with.
This is, yes, I love this track. And I would say, who does your dad look up to? And either bring that person or hire an impersonator. So if your dad really likes Elvis, no, Elvis is dead. So I think he might not let that one get past him. But John Lithgow, if he really likes John Lithgow.
But John Lithgow looks like a guy who might sit at the table without his shirt on.
Damn it. Oh. So then John Lithgow is going to be without his shirt too, slurping.
You do this too? Oh yeah. And he takes his shirt off and they both sit there eating and scooping food. And you got to be very careful about the guests you're going to invite over to make sure that they're not going to team up against the rest of the room.
That's very true. Yeah. Maybe that's why your dad is a slob in the first place. He looks up to other slobs. So good point. You got to be choosy on who you're inviting over, who he looks up to. But
that's really like, and the only other thing I think you could do is record him, the sounds he makes.
Oh, okay.
And then put that on your phone for your ringtone. And then like say to your dad, go, Dad, I can't find my phone. Can you call me? And then he'll hear the noise. He'll go, what is that? I go, oh, that's you eating. Your disgusting sounds that you make when you eat. I put that on my phone to remind me how disgusting you are when you eat. That way, he is actually bringing this up, not you.
That's wonderful. I like that. Anything else that could help this dad be a little less of a slurper, slob, and shirt wearer?
Hey, since we're, this could help. I don't know. Maybe this would help. Since we're in this kind of, we're in this pandemic, maybe you could video chat dinners with your dad and he could see all the other people that are wearing their shirts and not scooping their food, and then you can say, you know, this is my dad, the non-shirt wearer food scooper, quick eater guy. and then he can see people from outside the family, and maybe he would straighten up then too.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I also just wanted to circle back on your types of food. I think, and drink, for the drinks, maybe you could just have him drink slushies, because I think that you can't really slurp that or else brain freeze.
Yeah.
And then for food, I was thinking popsicles, but I don't know if you could make a meatloaf out of popsicle, but in some sort of form where he's not shoveling it down. Maybe if it's like a pizza, I guess pizza's a little better, right? Because you just pick it up and eat it.
I can't get past the shirt. Everything that you're seeing, as soon as I get like in my head, when I bring it and I see like the shirt is the big one for me.
Yeah, that's very true.
Is the dad in good shape? I mean, if he was, and we don't know how hairy he is. If he's in good, you know what? If he's in good shape, invite some women over so that he feels like he'll show him, and then maybe she can take care of this situation for him. I don't know. Maybe the dad's married. I don't know anybody who's still married, so I'm assuming that he's single dad.
Yeah. Because
a slovenly eating like that, I think that's a single dad.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like it.
You know, invite some women over that he wants to impress. You know, he'll look better. Maybe he'll put a shirt on and just button it down, unbutton it to the belly button. Still get the look that he's going for.
And he still gets belly button access. So yeah. For the picking.
Oh, I like that. Try those. Those are good. I think those are the best we can do. Because if he's 55 and that's how he eats, it's really going to be difficult to change.
At 55 years old, I mean, he's set in his ways. Maybe you should turn it around. I mean, you could follow have you tried getting a girl? Because that might be something. Listen to InspireBot. Just get a girl to distract you from the whole situation. And then,
but why are you still there at the house? I hope that this person's like 13 or 14 and can't leave.
Yeah, it could be. Could be. Maybe they just want to have a nice relationship with their dad, but they... No. Yeah. Have dessert. Just dessert with your dad.
Just make it a pie and just throw it on him.
Just make it a pie.
It sticks the pie off of his chest while he eats.
maybe just be better with yourself and just acknowledge that your dad's not going to change. And if you can't beat him, join him. Take off your shirt. Just be shirtless.
See, now I like that. I didn't think fight fire with fire. Yeah, take off the shirt.
Maybe it feels awesome to eat with a shirt off. I don't know. I haven't tried it before, except maybe at the beach. But maybe if you take your shirt off and you're just grubbing some chow, it's a great time. You feel liberated.
I liked it. I didn't think of the fight. Seriously, that's the way you got to fight that. Yeah, I like the no shirt.
And then take off your pants. And if he's like, that's too much, be like, well, look at you. And then you can have a conversation about it. But
yeah, what's the difference, Dad? Everything's covered. Everything that you have, it's covered.
I'm not showing any genitalia. No.
Go in deep. Get him that way.
Yeah, get him. Go German too, if you want to. Just speak very loudly.
Oh, you know what? I thought of one more. If he's shoveling his food, you could hide really spicy, like ghost pepper, little pieces of ghost pepper. And then, you know, he'd probably maybe pay a little bit more attention.
Fuck, man. I mean, I think these are real good. Wow. When I hit epiphanies that my pitch goes a little higher, but I feel like these are some great suggestions here.
Yeah.
Slushy to drink, spicy food, so he slows down with the eating. Take your shirt off too. And I mean, that's a perfect recipe for a less slob of a dad.
Got one last thing that I think if none of this works, you could buy the face paint kit, and you get one of those big like hats, go over the top of the body, and then you draw the face on the belly, and you have him sit there. He can do it, but just make him sit there with his belly paint, his face, the face on the belly, and the big giant hat that goes down below the shoulders. So at least it's entertaining for you.
The cherry on top of this sloppy table.
If you can't fix it, figure out a way to get a win out of it. And that to me is the win.
I think that's a perfect place to end it. All right.
All right.
So that is the last question and the end of this podcast. So thank you, Andy, for joining. This is a real pleasure.
No, thanks for having me on. Despite how I feel about podcasts, I enjoy conversation with people that know how to have one. And I enjoyed it very much so.
Oh, thank you so much. That's
two thumbs up.
Oh, yes, from my side as well. And I wanted to offer to our listeners, where can they find you? What have you got going on? What have you got to plug? Let them have it.
I'm Andy Comedy on Instagram. My website is andycomedy.com. Our podcast is Spears and Steinberg, all written out, Spears and Steinberg, and it's on most of the streaming platforms. And then if you really feel for me and how old I am, and you want to support a non-working comic, not by his own choice, but by everything closed, I do have t-shirts for sale on my website.
Yes, and I was just taking a gander because I am going to make a purchase and buy one for me and my dad since he doesn't wear shirts, but they're awesome shirts. They look really cool. I like the Sesame Street one and the one with your face logo. They're
got some new stuff into. We print everything, almost everything on Next Level shirts, so everything's real nice and soft. I just did this that face shirt on a see, I do forget words all the time, and I don't know why I do this. What's the thing? Camouflage. Yeah, I printed on the camouflage, and they don't make that in the Next Level. So I just did like a small run of those just for fun, just to have. But go online if you want to support me that way. That's great. I would appreciate it. But other than that, please listen to the Spears and Steinberg podcast if you get a chance. At least give it a shot. It's a very honest podcast, so bring your open ears. Don't bring if you're an uptight person, which I don't think you have people listening to your podcast. But if you're uptight, I'm going to tell you this anyway. Don't listen to my podcast. And if you do, and you want to write something in, write the letter that you want to write. I don't care. And write everything that you hate about me and the podcast, and then put that in an envelope, and then address that shit to yourself. And send it to you, and then read what an asshole you are when you get that letter back in.
That's excellent therapy. I actually like that. I might try that one of these days. Yeah. If I get really mad at my wife or something, or two strangers on a podcast that I have no idea who they are and I don't like something they said, I'll be like, you know what? Mailing it to myself.
Yeah. When you write what you're mad about and put in a letter, and then you read it like 3 or 4 days later, you realize that moment really wasn't that important.
Shit. I'm silent because it's pretty deep. It's funny, but it's also rings true.
Yeah, so. It is. And a good comedy should have some truth to it.
There you go. There you go.
Now, I'm going to change my quote to that. How's that? Good comedy should have some truth to it. Yeah, and if you do good comedy and it has truth to it, remember, no matter where you go, there you are.
There you are. And we are here. Well, that's awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Andy. And thank you, everybody. We'll talk at you next week. Bye-bye.